I've had a lot of clients in the past come to Manifest and say, I want to get into the field of government contracting, but I don't own a business yet. So what industry should I go in? I'm like, no, that's not how this works. Because if you're just picking an industry, a field to go in on a fly, you really don't know that industry.
You're listening to I Don't Do Budgets, the podcast that will teach you how to secure the bag beyond your 9-to-5, and will help you break away from the traditional ways of managing money so you can finally live financially free without restrictions. I'm your host, Sierra Howard, so let's get to the money. Hey, 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 welcome back to the I Don't Do Budgets show. Today's show is brought to you by Grasshopper.com. Save $50 on your order at trygrasshopper.com/IDDB. Okay, let's go ahead and get into the review of the week by L'Oreal, who says, I love this podcast. This podcast has taught me how to manage my finances, and it has also taught me how to build wealth in different ways. My favorite money resource is the I Don't Do Budgets podcast. Oh, thank you so much, love. I really appreciate that review. And if you're listening to this, please, please, please take 30 to 60 seconds and leave me a review. That's all it takes. And it helps for other people to be able to find the podcast when you leave reviews. And it also makes me feel good when I read the reviews. I love reading them, obviously. All right, so let's get into this week's episode. I'm gonna be honest, before recording this episode, I was a little intimidated and a little nervous to interview Keisha about government contracting, but I did my research to kind of understand high level. And honestly, I assumed that you had to have a certain type of business in order to get government contracts. But after talking to Keisha, I learned that any small business can get a government contract. Keisha Stowe is the founder and president of Manifest Inc., a nonprofit organization created to help small businesses maneuver through the confusing world of government contracting. Working as a federal contracting officer, she recognized the knowledge gap between quote unquote big businesses and small businesses when it came to government contracting. In 2014, Manifest Inc. was born to close the knowledge gap. As an experienced government contracting professional, Keisha holds federal government certifications in contracting and program management. She has advised selection boards, hosted small business forums, and educated over 350 small businesses on government contracting. Her enthusiasm to share knowledge makes her a great resource. Outside of developing businesses, Keisha enjoys developing her relationships with her little people, aka her children. You can often spot Keisha around the DMV area at Girl Scout events, riding shotgun with her son, or exploring a local Walmart. Now, let's get into government contracting with Keisha. Hi, Keisha. Welcome to the show today. I'm excited to have you.
Hi, Sierra. Thank you so much for having me.
So I always like to start off every show with, who is Keisha and what did you learn about money growing up?
Okay, so Keisha is a fun-loving, compassionate, skilled entrepreneur. I'm also a mother. I'm a service member. I am I'm an entrepreneur. And I'm purpose-filled. Growing up, what I learned about money is, not very much, actually. I grew up in the inner city of Los Angeles, California. And growing up, my household income, if you will, was based on AFDC, which is Aid to Families, Independent Children. So my mother was not a working parent. She was a single parent. She was not working. So that's how our household survived. And when things got too rough or when we really needed assistance, my grandmother was stepping in. So I didn't know much about money. I knew you needed it to buy things. I didn't know much about saving because we didn't have money left over at the end of the month to save. So I just knew you needed it. And it was spent. That was pretty much it.
I know that a lot of people kind of have similar backgrounds where they don't really learn about money growing up, or their parents really don't have it to teach them. So I always like to jump into that just to give people that perspective that not everybody learned about money growing up, but it's what you know now. So I'm glad you touched on that and you were able to speak on what you learned about money and also what you didn't learn about money, because it's so important to who you are today. So you help small businesses get government contracts. So walk us through, what are government contracts? What are the types? What do people need to know about them?
Well, government contracts are agreements that the government agency puts in place with business owners. And it could be a small business owner, a large business, an organization. And those agreements are for the procurement of goods and services on behalf of that government agency. And they are legally binding. There are several types of vehicles we use as government contracts. And I'm going back to the term we, right? Because I am an acquisition workforce professional. So I have experience in government contracting on the federal side of the house, and I'm certified in government contracting. So getting back to the types of vehicles. So the types of contract vehicles we use are purchase orders, which is a purchase order is nothing more than me sending you a request for an item or service, and then you sending me back a quote in return. And and if I decide to do business with you, then I will just make good on the quote. So that is a purchase order. So that's very simple. Most of us do that in our daily lives when we're purchasing things from businesses. The next type of contract vehicle we utilize is a BPA, which is a blanket purchase agreement. And that agreement is in place with, it could be one business owner or numerous business owners. And it's just that, it's an agreement. So there is no obligation. The government does not have an obligation to purchase anything from the business owner if there is a BPA in place. It just simply says, if we need the items that you are selling, we will more than likely purchase them from you. And there's a period of time on the BPA. It could be 1 year. It could be 2 years. It could be anything up to 5 years. The key to that is there is no obligation for the government agency to purchase anything from you. And then the last contract vehicle I will mention is the IDIQ, which is the indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity contract vehicle. And it's just how it sounds. So there's an indefinite delivery. We don't know where we're going to need the items or services that you procure. And then indefinite quantity. We don't know in what volume we're going to need the items or services you provide. But we do have an agreement with you. And unlike the BPA, there is an obligation to purchase something at a minimum cost. So in the IDIQ agreement, there will be a floor or a minimum amount that we're going to offer you, whether we purchase something from you or not. So there's a little more benefit to these businesses that enter IDIQs, unlike a BPA. But all of them serve various purposes, and they're used for various purposes, and they all could be of benefit to the business owner.
Could you give me an example of a type of business that the government would need to purchase materials from or products from?
Okay, absolutely. So say, for instance, a federal government agency is deciding to build a new facility. Well, they're going to need a general contractor for the program management and the construction of that facility, as well as subcontractors to do the flooring, to do the electrical work, to do the heating and air. And when that building is erected, they will also need furniture. So the government also will provide contracts to companies that provide furnishings. So those are just some examples of the type of companies the government agencies do business with. And the government buys anything from a pencil to administrative services to ships. So there is some room for everyone in whatever industry you provide goods or services in.
Did you say chips?
Ships.
Okay. I'll take that. I was like, okay.
Ships.
Okay. So that makes sense now. So I want to take it back for a little second. How did you even get into government contracting?
Well, it was almost like, it was a blessing in disguise. I kind of like came up on it by happenstance. So in 2008, I was on active duty, and I was transitioning from active duty to the National Guard in South Carolina. And my original career field while I was on active duty was finance. So I wanted to continue in my career as a financial manager within the National Guard. But when I talked to a recruiter, the recruiter stated that there were no positions available in finance. He said, well, there are no positions available in finance, but we do have this thing called acquisition. And I had heard about it, but I didn't really know what it entailed. So I was like, okay, well, that sounds good. I'll sign up for that. So I end up being in a unit or organization that all they did was government contracts. So I went to school to learn about government contracting. Then I came back to the organization and I did what we call OJT, on-the-job training, which is a requirement in our career field. So I sat in the purchasing and contracting office for about 3 years, just kind of gaining experience and knowledge. And that's hands-on experience and knowledge in government contracting. So that's how I came into the career field and gained my knowledge about government contracting. I sought legal counsel because I wanted to start a business. Initially, the business was going to be a for-profit business where I would teach business owners how to maneuver through the world of government contracting. But legal counsel advised that that would not be a wise decision, that could pose a conflict of interest, especially considering I was one of the individuals behind the scenes that were looking at all of these proposals and quotes that were being generated by the small business community in response to solicitations or notices that we sent out about contracting opportunities. So I said, okay, well, I won't start a not-for-profit, but my main reason for wanting to even establish a business is because I want to educate business owners, especially small business owners, on the government contracting process. So I made a petition to legal counsel and I said, hey, what if I just start a not-for-profit? Can I do that? And they were like, for what purpose? I said, well, for the purpose of educating small businesses. And they were like, okay, that's a lot better. So that's how Manifest Inc. came into existence. Manifest is a not-for-profit organization created to help small business owners maneuver through the world of government contracting.
Okay. And then you ended up starting a business from that. And I want to know more about if there was a conflict of interest when you started your business, or how did that work out?
Oh, absolutely. There was definitely a conflict of interest. So as I gained experience and knowledge of government contracting, working with small businesses on how to get involved with government contracting, I realized there were a lot of small businesses in South Carolina that could fulfill our requirements, but they just weren't fulfilling the requirements. So I did a little research and digging to find out why that was happening. And what I realized is that a lot of small business owners were not registered with the Small Business Administration in their area. And they were not registered on SAM, which is the System for Award Management. First and foremost, you want, as a small business owner, you want your business to be legally formalized and recognized within your state. So whatever your state's requirements are for forming your business, you want to make sure that you're adhering to.
I love that, because I think a lot of people don't really know too much about government contracting or how to even find them. So I think it's amazing that you were able to start a business educating small business owners how to get these contracts. So as a small business owner, what are the benefits? Why would someone even want to go after a government contract?
I think that's a great question, Sierra, because as a small business owner, you're looking at the cost of submitting a proposal, the cost of payroll. So one of the benefits to, or some of the benefits to small business owners would be, it's a way to expand your business portfolio, right? You've already been in business. Everything is going good. You're generating revenue and you're looking for ways to expand. So you have your payroll, you have your employees. Again, you're just looking for other opportunities to expand your business. This would be a great opportunity to expand your business via government contracts. If you are a small business owner and you don't have a payroll established yet, you don't have money to put into the cost of preparing a proposal, there are other opportunities for you. And some of that, a lot of that has to do with a, what we call an assignment of claims, is where you can go to the bank, your local bank, whoever you typically do business with. And if you are awarded a government contract, they will provide you with a loan, of course, that's secured by the government contract. So the payments that you would otherwise be getting paid from the contract will now go to the bank to pay off the loan. So there are different techniques like that that would assist you in expanding your business, because we all are in this to try to, I'm hoping you're in business to make money. So if you're in business to make money, you definitely want to get to the point of making more money. So this is just another way of making that more money.
Oh, I love that. And I didn't even know that that was a thing. You could go get a loan and then the government contract could pay it back. So that's a really cool way to get a loan as well.
Yes. Yeah, don't tell nobody I told you that.
She's giving out the exclusive secrets, y'all. Okay, so you mentioned some examples of people being able to get a contract, you know, them have like a furniture business or a general contractor and things like that. But are there contracts for service-based businesses?
Absolutely. The federal government procures consulting services. So let's take a look at businesses like Accenture, Deloitte. Those are all service-based businesses, and they provide services to the federal government. So absolutely, there's an opportunity for service-based companies within the government contracting arena as well.
And can you be like a small service-based business? Let's say like you have a business similar to yours, and maybe you teach financial coaching to high school students. Like, could that person go get a government contract?
Absolutely. You absolutely can. It's all based on your industry, your target audience, and then seeking the government agencies that cater to your target audience and that would require your service.
Ooh,
so remember what I said. Government agencies purchase everything. Everything you can imagine. So don't count yourself out by assuming they don't purchase what you're selling, whether that be a good or a service.
Oh, I love that. Okay, good. I'm glad you touched on that.
Secondly, you want to be registered in SAM, which is the System for Award Management. The federal government will not issue you a contract. They will deem you ineligible if you are not registered in SAM. And you can, registration can be done directly from the website, which is www.betasam.gov. And so if you register in SAM, that doesn't guarantee you any government contract opportunities. But what it does guarantee is that when we as government contracting professionals are out there looking for small businesses to fulfill our requirements, we can actually see you. And that registration itself can be done. It's self-registration. So you don't have to pay anybody to assist you in registering your business unless you just feel like there's a convenience there and you don't want to do the work. But it's definitely possible for you to register your own business in SAM.
Is it difficult to register? Like, is it a long, extensive process, or is it pretty straightforward and simple?
Look, I think it's straightforward and simple, but you may not think it's straightforward and simple. There are a few YouTube tutorials out there that'll walk you through the process. Manifest is definitely here, willing to walk any small business, any business owner through the process. But it is straightforward. There are some documents that you definitely need to have handy when registering your business. but it's not impossible.
And how does a small business position itself to win a contract?
We talked about one way, right? SAM, via SAM. And the reason why SAM is very important for you as for small business owners is because government contracting professionals go out into the SAM database and they conduct what's called market research. So they search for businesses within specific industries that they think may be able to fill their requirements. So that's one way to position yourself. You have to be registered in SAM, and you want to make sure that your registration is public. A lot of business owners mark their registration private. Well, if your registration is private and I'm just going out at a glance and doing a search, I can't see you. So the only way I can see you is if I log on with my user ID and password onto the SAM system and go behind the scenes and do a search. I'm going to let you in on a little secret. Most government contracting professionals are not doing that. They're not willing to go through all that trouble. I advise small business owners. I advise business owners. Always make your registration public. So that's one way you can position yourself. Another way you can position yourself is by having a capability statement already drafted. And the capability statement includes all of the pertinent information about your company, the contact information, your CAGE code, which will come after you register your business in SAM, your DUNS number, which will come while you're registering your business in SAM. SAM is going to direct you back to Dun & Bradstreet for you to register with Dun & Bradstreet to generate a DUNS number. That is part of the SAM process. On that capability statement, you need to have contact information, your DUNS, your CAGE code, and where you're located, as well as a narrative of the products and services that you provide. You also want to have any past performance information. So if you've done federal contracts in the past or state contracts in the past, you want to have that information readily available. And it doesn't have to be detailed, just the contract number and the dollar amount and the specific contract name, what service or good you provided, product you provided. In addition to that, you also want to have on this capability statement any other pertinent information to your organization, such as any small business certifications, whether you're veteran-owned, whether you're woman-owned, whether you participate in the Small Businesses 8A program. So those are things you want to have identified as well. And all of this information is only on one sheet of paper. And so this capability statement, you can pretty much walk into any government contracting agency and drop it off. And they'll collect that data and put your information into a file, a vendor file. You can also call contracting agencies to set up an in-person capabilities brief where you go in person, you take up 10 or 15 minutes of their time, and you kind of give them a spiel on who you are and what you do. So those are some great ways to position yourself as a government contractor.
And from your side of the business, what are some things that you really look for to say, okay, this one is the one I'm going to choose? I know you mentioned a lot of like the capabilities, but do you kind of look for something over the other when it comes down to a few of them and you're like, okay, I have a few of them that I want, but this one is the one that I'm going to choose because of XYZ?
Well, you know what? There's really no trick on that. Here's why. Because what I found out in my experience is when government contracting professionals send out what's called a solicitation, it's going to have in there all of the criteria that will be evaluated by individuals that are going to be part of that selection process. So if you follow the guidance that's laid out in the solicitation, it's going to be, you're going to provide the selection panel with information that is going to be in your benefit. So they're going to have a hard time selecting who to choose from. But we throw out a lot of proposals or offers because small businesses just simply don't adhere to the solicitation guidance. So if you're missing one thing, we may consider you to be non-responsive. If you didn't talk or discuss something that we told you should be a part of your proposal, we may consider you non-responsive. So simply just adhering to the guidance in the solicitation will go a long way And when it gets down to the point where there are four companies in compliance, again, the solicitation is going to tell you who we're going to choose. It could be lowest price technically acceptable, which means after all those bids have come in, if everyone's in compliance, if every business owner is on the same level, then we'll pick the one with the lowest price. But you will never know that, of course, because you don't know what the other business owners, the dollar figure that they proposed. So that solicitation is going to give you all of that. It's going to tell you if we're picking the lowest price. It's going to tell you if we're not picking the lowest price, what we are looking at when we're selecting the best offer for the government.
Oh, okay. I love that you touched on price because that was going to be my next question. So how does someone even position themselves as far as like price wise? So do you just throw out a number? What are some things that they need to have when looking for prices? Do you guys ever negotiate? Are they already set sometimes? And then they just tell you this is how much we're going to pay you. How does that work?
Great question, Sierra. So pricing is a big thing for us. Yes, we do negotiate. It all depends on that contract and the technical level required for that contract. And then how scarce it is to fulfill the requirement that we're asking for. So if there's only one vendor or two vendors, we may be more willing to negotiate. If there are hundreds of vendors, the likelihood of negotiation is probably going to be slim to none. And pricing, what we do is we identify, we develop what's called a IGCE, an independent government cost estimate. So that independent government cost estimate is going to give us a guess of what it would cost to procure the good or service we need. It's not always on point, and it's just only an estimate. But it'll give us a ballpark figure. So we have done our market research on the back end to be able to identify how much something should cost. So if there's a requirement and a solicitation goes out for, let's say, janitorial cleaning services, we've already done our homework oftentimes to identify how much janitorial cleaning services cost. So that's how we develop our cost estimate. And the price tag that we're tying to that particular requirement or that contract is based on that estimate. Sometimes it's the exact estimate. Sometimes there's a buffer, but that is all dependent upon the agency. That's something agencies, federal agencies have leeway with. So that's how we develop our pricing in-house. And for small business owners, the best thing they can do is know their industry. I cannot stress that enough. You ought to be an expert in your industry. So you should know how much it costs to buff a floor that is 300 square feet. And so with all of that knowledge and expertise that you possess, put that into your figures to develop pricing that is not only accurate, that is reasonable and fair.
Okay. Yes, I love that you said that. Know your industry. I feel like everybody should know their industry. Anyway, so that's a good call out. So what are some rules and regulations that a small business owner must follow when they get the government contract?
Oh, that's a good one, Sierra, because government contracting can be convoluted. There's a lot of legalese tied to these contracts. The best thing a business owner can do is research. In addition to researching, is knowing, having an idea of the FAR, which is the Federal Acquisition Regulation. And the Federal Acquisition Regulation is what government contracting professionals utilize to develop these government contracts. And there are supplements. Almost every agency has a supplement to the FAR. So, for instance, the Department of Defense, which includes the Army, the Air Force, and the Navy, they have their supplements to the FAR. So DOD, which is Department of Defense, may have the DFARS, so the Defense Federal Acquisition Regulation. And then since the Army falls under the DOD, the Army has their supplement, which is the AFAR, which is the Army Federal Acquisition Regulation. So not only should you be looking at the federal government as a whole, but whichever agency is providing you with that contract award, you need to be aware or familiar with their regulation.
So it's a lot for you to know and research when it comes to being aware and understanding the different regulations. Where does somebody even go? Like, I know you can Google, but is there like a site that you can look on and see, okay, here are the regulations. These are the exact things that I need to be following.
Absolutely. Now, the Federal Acquisition Regulation is public. So, and the best site for that is called HillSiteFAR, I believe it is, but it is a government site. So you should see the .gov at the end. If it's not .gov, it's probably someone else posting information in reference to the FAR. But HillSiteFAR is the best site to utilize when you're trying to kind of go through, sift through the regulation. And there's also a search box in that website that you can put a word in or a phrase in. And of course, it'll search the entire regulation and it'll bring up different parts of the regulation that contain that particular term or that phrase. Other good sources are SBA, which is your Small Business Administration in your local area. Another good source is PTAC, which is the Procurement Technical Assistance Center. And the PTACs are provided with government grants to service the small business community, especially when it comes to government contracting. So they're there to assist you as well. Now, keep in mind, SBA and PTAC in your local area may only be as good as the personnel that work there. So some of them are better than others, but they are all worth a try and they are free services.
Oh, okay. And I'll link to those in the show notes so people can be able to get those websites and look up those local services. So we talked about the rules and regulations and, you know, getting the contract, but let's talk about judging your performance and being able to get the contracts again. So after someone completes a contract, do you kind of keep that in mind and say, okay, they did a great job, or we won't hire them again because they messed up here?
Absolutely. And it generally depends upon the level of performance, right? Generally depends on the contract award amount. So whatever that contract award dollar figure was is what drives whether or not your performance will be captured formally, if that makes sense. And so there is a threshold figure. I don't want to spit it out because it changed and I don't want to say the wrong figure, but there is a figure. I think it used to be $750,000 would require a formal performance evaluation. So there is a system that we utilize, CPARS. And so this system is designed to capture all of the performance information and evaluations for government contractors. So if I'm looking to award a contract that I think is costly, I'm going to search the system. Oftentimes, I don't even have an option. I have to search the system and pull up whatever past performance has been entered on a bit specific business. So yes, we do capture that information. So as a small business owner, you always want to keep that in mind, that past performance can hinder or improve your chances of getting contracts in the future.
And if someone does really good, do you guys keep a list of people who were exceptional? So then that way you don't necessarily have to get the bids. Do you sometimes say, oh, well, I know so-and-so did really good on this one. We're just going to go ahead and contact them directly.
I'm going to say yes and no. I'm going to say yes because, of course, we do that here. But I'm going to say no because, on the record, we have to give fair an opportunity to small businesses across the board. So if the threshold is $25,000 or more, that specific requirement has to go into FBO, which is Federal Business Opportunities, and that's a database that we put our solicitations into. And then the small business community or the business community can search that database and see the opportunities that are out there that apply to their industry. And they can therefore submit a proposal to. So, but that's for everything over $25,000. And so we don't necessarily go directly to a business if it's over $25,000, unless there are some other circumstances at play. Like it's a sole source award where only one person can perform, or it's under, the contract was already under the Small Businesses 8A program. And if you are a certified 8A, so the number 8 and the letter A business, then we may just directly award something to you, right? Because those are, that's one of the benefits of being in the Small Business 8A program. That business is to enhance opportunities for small disadvantaged businesses. But outside of that, we solicit everything over, we solicit everything $25,000 and above on FBO. Now, things that are below $25,000, we have a little more leeway. Oftentimes, contracting professionals may send emails, they may make phone calls to solicit business owners and get them to submit a proposal or a quote. Now, we have to get more than one. We generally say the rule of thumb is three, but that comes from that vendor list that we hold internally, that we maintain internally to our organizations. And those vendors that have done excellent jobs or performed exceptional in the past will be on those that list, be a part of that list. So we would definitely reach out to those individuals again or those businesses again.
And then you mentioned the 8A program. How does someone get in that program or qualify?
Now, the 8A program is a small business administration program. You can go to their, any small business owner can go to their website, which is www.sba.gov, and they have a certifications link. And if you click on the link, it'll have several different certifications, and one of them is their 8A program. If you click on that link, it'll have the criteria for and the application for applying for the 8A program. And okay, the main criteria is being considered a socio and economically disadvantaged small business within your industry. All right, if we haven't talked about, we should talk about NAICS codes. And that NAICS, which is the, it's the North American Industry System Code, I believe. And that code is based on whatever industry your business is in. You could have one code or you could have 50 codes. But whatever your primary codes are is what SBA is going to consider when they're determining whether or not to award you or to accept you into their 8A program. So it's not just in general terms, you apply and then you wait to be accepted or not. It's based on your specific industry. And that's ran, and that's determined by the amount of employees you have, the amount of revenue that you generate annually. And then they have some other criteria, where you're located, how long you've been in business, so things like that.
Oh, okay. I love that. So we really didn't even talk about like size and revenue and things like that when it comes to being a small business and the contracts that you have to have. So that would be one thing that you guys look at as well when it comes to awarding contracts, is the size and the revenue, right?
Now, size and revenue only matters to us when we are verifying if you are a small business. When small businesses register in SAM, they're going to identify whether or not they're a small business in their agency. So when acquisition professionals go in and they do a search in the SAM database for businesses in a specific industry, it's going to identify whether or not that business is a small business. So we don't look any further unless we have reasonable doubt that you are not a small business. If that particular solicitation or requirement was set aside for a small business, because all requirements are not set aside for small businesses, but then there are a lot that are specifically set aside for small business owners. What a lot of business owners don't realize is that the government has small business goals, and every federal agency is charged to meet the small business goals annually that have been established. So a lot of their contracts are set aside for small business owners. So it's important to identify whether or not your company is a small business owner in your industry. And when you go to register in SAM and you put in your the next code that you think applies to your business or your industry, it'll tell you how many employees you have to have to be considered a small business, whether it's based on employees or revenue. And if it's based on revenue, it'll tell you how much money you cannot make or generate in a year to be considered a small business. So it'll identify that information for you. So it will not be left up to you to have to guess that.
Okay. And that's super helpful. It seems like they just kind of walk you through and you're able to figure it out as you're applying. So you're not just like, oh, I'm a small business, and you're actually not.
Absolutely.
So we talked about a lot. So I want to know, overall, if someone's listened to this episode, they're wanting to secure some government contracts, what are three tips that you would give them to get started?
I always tell small businesses and potential clients to know your industry. I've had a lot of clients in the past come to Manifest and say, I want to get into the field of government contracting, but I don't own a business yet. So what industry should I go in? I'm like, no, that's not how this works. Because if you're just picking an industry, a field to go in on a fly, you really don't know that industry. So now you're out there just fishing for government contracts. You could be overpricing. You could be undercutting yourself. You could be stating that you can fill requirements that you really cannot fulfill. So it is very important to know your industry. So you are to be the subject matter expert. That government representative, they will have experts on their team to understand the industry. But that acquisition or that contract professional does not know your industry. They are not an expert in your industry. Like I said, there may be one or two people that are part of the group, the team that knows the industry, but that specific individual that is actually writing the solicitation or the contract probably doesn't know your industry. So it's up to you to know your industry. The second tip I would give is ensure you have financial systems in place to accurately maintain your books in an organized manner. Because the government does have the ability to want to audit your books. So you want to make sure that your books are audible. So you want to have those financial systems in place already. You don't want to have 5 to 10 government contracts and realize you need a financial system on the back end. It's always easier to have that in place now. The third tip is take advantage of free resources geared towards helping small businesses understand or maneuver through the government contracting process. So SBA offers a lot of workshops. PTAC offers some workshops. There are some federal agencies that offer workshops. I know the National Guard offers workshops that small businesses can attend to learn more about what the National Guard generally purchases and how to do business with the National Guard. So there are several agencies that have those type of workshops. I would say take advantage of them because oftentimes they're free.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yes. Okay. You've given us a lot of resources and the requirements of behind the scenes. So I think that this has been a wealth of information. So I really, really appreciate you breaking everything down and providing those exact resources for people to go to. So what's next for you and your business?
Well, what's next for Manifest is we are preparing to launch a series of in-person and virtual workshops. Some of them, most of them will be free, and then the others will be at a nominal, minimal cost, but they will be well worth the investment. Because again, Manifest is geared towards helping small business owners maneuver through the government contracting process. There are no hidden secrets. There are no keys. Oftentimes, small business owners think that they can't get into government contracting because it's only for quote unquote big businesses like Northrop and Grumman and Boeing. But that's not reality. The reality is there are enough government contracts and money on the table for everybody to eat. But you just have to be knowledgeable and equipped as a business owner to be able to go after those opportunities.
I love that. So We're going to go ahead and get into what's in your bag, and I will ask you a series of questions, and you just tell me the first thing that comes to mind.
Okay.
Ready?
Yep.
Okay, number one, knowing what you know now, what would you tell your younger self?
Oh, I would tell my younger self to spend wisely. I was an impulsive spender when I was younger. So I think doing things a little bit differently at 17, because I joined the military at 17. I got my first paycheck. I was super excited. But every month, my paycheck was from what it was. I think back then it was like $1,100 to zero at the end of every month. I did not save. I just spent. So I would tell my younger self to spend wisely and to invest.
I would tell my younger self the same thing. So we're on the same page. Number two, what is your favorite money resource? And this could be an app, book, podcast, or someone that you follow on Instagram.
One of my favorite money resources is Acorn, because I don't have to worry about it. I can set it and forget it. And then when I look at my bank account, I'm like, oh, I saved $100 this month. You know, it's not much, but over a period of time, it just adds up. And that's money I didn't even think about. So I like Acorns. And then for my kids, I like Rat Race for Kids, because we get into discussions about credit and debt and how interest works and all of that. I recently had a conversation with my son who was 17, and we were talking about interest. And we were talking about specifically interest on purchasing a car. And he was amazed on how that works and why someone would buy a car at like an 18 plus interest rate. Percent interest rate. So for him, and watching his eyes just light up as to, you know, the decisions about that's around money and financial management and the decisions that people make, and how he's coming into the awareness of it all, you know, is amazing. So we learn to do that through Rat Race. I think it puts a kid friendly spin onto learning money management.
And is Rat Race a game?
Yes, it's a game. It is. Ooh. It's a board game.
Wait, are you talking about cash flow?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Cash flow for kids.
Okay.
Cash flow for kids. You are
right.
I was
like, dang, I haven't heard
that. Yes, okay. Cash flow for kids.
Okay.
Yep.
Number three, looking back, what makes you say, I'm so glad I did that?
I guess coming into the field of government contracting, because like I stated before, I was unsure about what it entailed. So I am so happy I came into the field of government contracting, because I wouldn't have been able to, you know, gain all this knowledge that I have now to be able to help small businesses.
Love that, because a lot of people don't know too much about it. So I love that you're out here teaching people. Number four, what would make 2020 a good year for you?
2020 will be a good year if I can launch my virtual course that I am preparing. That would be a good year. So it's a virtual training course. It'll be 4 to 6 weeks. And so it'll walk you through the government contracting process. It's specifically designed for small business owners who are new to government contracting. So it'll be catered towards them.
So number five, what is a personal habit that helps you secure the bag?
Now, my personal habit, some people would disagree, but it's my personal habit. I look at my bank, what's in my bank account. So if I am not making a necessary purchase, whether it's food, paying rent, bills, that type of thing, and my purchase is optional, I always go to my bank account and look to see if I have the money in there, right? Because I got this thing, I like seeing my coins. So if I look in my bank account and I set an amount I like to see all the time, so if that amount is not what I'm seeing, then I do not make the purchase.
I love that. And last question, for those out there who are wanting to secure the bag beyond a 9-to-5 job, what homework would you give them?
I would say research government agencies. There are over 350 federal government agencies. Notice I said federal government agencies. So we haven't even talked about state and local agencies yet. There are over 350 federal government agencies. Research the government agencies to identify which ones purchase the product or service you're selling. That's important. because sometimes I think people go out here and they try to sell to agencies that don't necessarily buy what they're selling. So let's talk about the Department of Education. You sell ship parts. Would you poach the Department of Education? Probably not, because they don't have a need for ship parts. But if you have a mentoring program that you're trying to get into the school system, would you poach the Department of Education? Probably. That would probably be a great agency for you to check out.
I love that. I've learned so much in this short time that we've talked, and I want you to plug yourself, tell people how they can reach you, how can they work with you, everything.
Okay, so everybody is invited to a free 30-minute consultation with me, and you can do that by going to my online calendar at Keisha, KESHALM01.appointee.com, or you can give me a call. Our business line is 803-393-2502 to set up your 30-minute consultation, or you can email us at information@manifestme.org.
And I will add all those in the show notes as well. So thank you so much, Keisha. This has been a wealth of information, and you have just dropped so many gems, and I'm so happy, and I'm glad we were able to do this episode, because it's very different from the typical episodes, and I want to talk about the things that most people aren't talking about, and I want to be able to highlight those things. So you have done an amazing job. So thank you for everything that you're doing for the small businesses out here and educating everyone.
Well, thank you. You are so welcome. Thank you for having me. Once again, Manifest is just out here trying to educate our small business community on government contracting. Because like I said, it's enough at the table for everybody to eat.
Yes, I love that. Wow. Keisha shed so much light on government contracting. I mean, there are so many resources and avenues available. My biggest takeaways were, number one, any small business can get a government contract. Two, you need to have your ducks in a row before you can get a government contract, meaning you need to be legally formalized, have your financial systems in place, have a DUNS number, et cetera. All of the gems that Keisha dropped on having your business together before you secure government contracts. And then lastly, there are so many resources to help you get government funding. And then I also love how Keisha mentioned that you can get a small business loan at a bank and use your contract in order to pay the loan back. So there are so many benefits to government contracting that I had no clue about. So make sure you share your top three takeaways with me and Keisha on social media. And always, always, always tag us. Also, make sure you join the I Don't Do Budgets Facebook group, where we continue the conversation. And then let me know if you would like me and Keisha to go live to talk more about government contracting. Always want to hear from you. So that's it and that's all. I hope you have a great week. Thanks for listening to I Don't Do Budgets. If you're ready to finally live financially free without restrictions and secure the bag, visit IDon'tDoBudgets.com to work with me. And if you want to keep up with me, follow me on Instagram and Facebook at I Don't Do Budgets. Lastly, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes. Thanks, and as always, keep securing the bag, and I'll talk to you next week.